Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with MoneyWeb.
Now, President Trump's announcement of sweeping new U.S. tariffs, 10% on all imports, 34% on Chinese goods, 20% on EU products, 30% for South Africa, has predictably reignited fears of a global trade war. For us in South Africa, this adds to growing uncertainty, just as the latest import duty investigation report reveals a dysfunctional tariff regime at home, years-long delays, outdated protections, opaque reciprocal agreements. So I want to look at both the global and local trade pressures, and I can think of no one better to talk to than Donald McKay. He's been with us on the program before, Chief Executive Officer of XA Global Trade Advisors. Donald, a very warm welcome. So the ripple effects, or what are the ripple effects that South Africa firstly should expect from these U.S. tariff hikes, particularly in export-heavy sectors like automotives and metals?
Yeah, so automotive is probably going to take the most direct hit. We exported last year around 32 billion rands worth of cars. Most of those really came from two companies, though. So it's BMW and Mercedes-Benz that are going to take the hardest hit of all. And that obviously, particularly Mercedes-Benz in East London, you know, they kind of are the anchor tenant of East London. So if the hit goes to Mercedes-Benz, I assume it'll ripple into the rest of the community quite quickly. Yeah, it's the 30% is an astonishing number. We've got some analysts working through data at the moment to try to work out what the implications are. But my immediate answer is this is a very bad moment for South Africa.
And it's not just, for instance, those two auto manufacturers, but it would be all OEMs right down the supply chain. There would be a domino effect, surely.
Yes. So, I mean, of course, every car is made up of components, and that could be quite a long supply chain. So if Mercedes-Benz is hit, then everyone that supplies Mercedes-Benz will take pain as well. Absolutely.
Donald, there's no doubt that globally these moves are already starting to trigger a tit-for-tat response, and that leaves a small trade-dependent economy like South Africa increasingly vulnerable, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, America has quite simply become an incredibly unreliable trading partner. And, you know, it really means that our kind of 9% or so of our exports that go to the U.S., I think, are at perpetual risk. And until we can diversify some of that to other countries, I think we'll remain vulnerable. I have simply no idea how we deal with our relationship with Donald Trump when he is so volatile.
And just in terms then, and I want to get to your report on tariff investigations in just a second, but just on this big issue, I just wondered to myself whether South Africa is agile enough in its current trade policies to respond to shocks like this, and one senses there will be more, or do you think that we're simply boxed in often by our own regulatory delays?
Yeah, so I think there is an element of us being boxed in, and we're absolutely not agile. We're sort of the very opposite of agile. But I think, having said that, the crisis here is almost far greater than any other. So I think we'll see a measure of urgency around this that might be quite unusual and welcome in this case. Of course, it's not just South Africa. So the whole world is getting hit. I think we will begin to see new alliances, new areas, as people all try to insulate themselves from the U.S. You know, I suspect our trading patterns a year from now will look very, very different to how they do at the moment.
So let's talk about your import duty investigation report, and it doesn't make Donald for happy reading. Some tariff investigations remain unresolved after 58 months. How is this possible, and at what economic cost?
Yeah, so I don't entirely know what the reason is. I mean, that's a question you would have to pose to the authorities. The effect of it is manifests in a few ways. The first is some companies simply can't ride out the period. And so they stopped trading. There's an example of the ground nuts industry in our report, which took a really big hammering and after 50 months said, we can't wait anymore and we're closing up. So, you know, we're going to withdraw our application. That's an extreme example, but there's no reason to think more versions of that cannot arise, especially in a world where the US becomes such a volatile player. So I don't know what the reasons are. I mean, I can make my guesses, but there's somewhere in that process, the urgency that this deserves is simply being lost. And, you know, I think a part of that is that the policy has shifted from just economics into something a little bit more extractive in the form of what is referred to as reciprocal agreements. So if you want to change, you've got to give something in return. And the harder the squeeze is, the more companies, I suspect, are pushing back against that. And so that drags the process out.
Let me bring you back to this Groundnuts case, which I think is quite important. If I've read your report correctly, it led to a business shutdown. Does one place the blame then squarely at the feet of the International Trade Administration Commission? Is there serious institutional failure there, do you think?
Well, you know, we wouldn't place the blame, but the applicant who had requested additional duty protection says the delay is one of the reasons they are not continuing with their business. So, you know, I'm going to take them at their word for now. I mean, that was published in a government gazette by ITAC, so I must assume that statement to be accurate. I don't think the bulk of this problem sits with ITAC. There's a legacy problem. ITAC, there are issues at times, but for the most part, ITAC does their investigations fairly swiftly. The challenge arises when it leaves ITAC, and then there are two ministers to sign off. And we see that the delays under the previous Minister of Trade got particularly bad. So I would suspect the challenge sits with the two ministers more than it does with ITAC. And of course, ITAC can't implement the changes. All they can do is make a recommendation, and then the politician has to implement.
You also talk about 93% of duties, correct me if I've got the percentage wrong, are still in place in spite of not being reviewed in over two decades. Again, why is that, and where's the benefit and where's the disadvantage?
Well, you should think of a tariff as an incentive to try to get someone to do something. What you don't want to do is create a situation where you raise a tariff which will push up prices of that product in South Africa, and then you just kind of leave it there. And then the domestic producer just sits with the rent that they bank, or even worse, the domestic producer disappears, but you still have the tariff. So the problem is, after 20 years, nobody knows if some of these companies that originally applied for the tariff are still around. And, you know, we say 20 years, but in fact, some of these cases appear to go back, you know, at least another decade or two beyond that. So we want an agile policy, which also means when you give protection, you review it after a period.
So let me just pick you up on that finally then. There's no doubt there is now growing global trade instability. There's no doubt that we cannot afford a sluggish or outdated tariff system. So how does that urgent reform manifest itself in order to not only protect but maybe even enhance our competitiveness?
So I think the current minister is very aware that this is an issue to be fixed, and I've reason to believe he's working very hard on trying to resolve it. And I know that ITAC recognizes this to now be a problem. I mean, there was a difference of opinion before, but I think everyone recognizes this is an important problem to fix. I think that the challenge is when a case gets beyond a certain point, where it's become so old, it becomes politically very difficult to deal with. So what do you do? You know, if you simply reject the case after 5 years and you say, well, we're not going to deal with this, then the question is, why did it take 5 years? And if you take a decision after 5 years without updating the information, then you're basing your decision on five-year-old data. So you're sort of between a rock and a hard place. And I suspect that's a part of the reason why the very old cases are just not getting cleared.
Making sense for us of a very complex at times and difficult subject. Donald McKay, Chief Executive Officer, XA Global Trade Advisors. Always appreciate your time. Thank you.
Heart Business on Heart 1027 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.